Well, welcome everybody. It's time for the one show that wanders the wilderness in search of new sales techniques and technologies. With your own personal pilgrim through this strange new wilderness, taking you out into the frontiers of what's possible, it's international sales trainer, Will Crist. What's up, Will?
Well, here we are. Welcome to the Pilgrim Talks on this wonderful, bright, shiny day here in Laguna Beach. I'm noticing lots of things as I walk up and down, drive through the 405, all around Orange County and L.A. County. I'm noticing a very different attitude toward things, and it's not just because it's spring. What I'm seeing is that people are waking up and realizing that they've got a couple of choices, that if they don't get out and start taking over the marketplace, somebody else is going to, and they might get squeezed in the process. So we're hearing lots of voices on the phone calling up and saying, hey, can you help? Because a number of different things are coming down to change the marketplace. Some are related to regulations where people are going to need to be changing some things, and they've been putting it off as long as they could. And now that the marketplace is picking up and looks like the economy is strengthening, the regulators are saying it's time to make these changes. So people are asking us to help them with sales to the various places they're going to need to be making those changes. As well, other companies coming and saying it's now time to dominate our marketplace. So they're looking for ways that they can help to strengthen their people to move out of that comfort zone where they're only talking to their current customers and trying to get more business. And they're looking at ways that they can break into the marketplace to find new customers. And we know that most of the new customers are currently customers of somebody else. So that means that they're going to have to get into a competitive spot and change the way they're doing business to grow their business. Otherwise, business is going to be taken away from them. So it's very interesting out there right now in the marketplace. I wouldn't say it's a time of chaos. I would say it's a time of changing dramatically what we're doing and how we're doing it. And one of those pieces that we're changing is how we go about finding new prospects. Sometimes that's called lead generation. In fact, we have a whole show on Thursday afternoon that's focused on lead generation, lead management. But breaking into new areas, that we're going to find out today that that's not always the skill set of our sales team. In fact, we might have people on our sales team who are very good at working with companies to solve problems, to create solutions, and to help close a deal. But they may not be very good at breaking in through those huge walls that are there in this marketplace to keep people out. So they may not be as good at prospecting as they are at closing deals. And so maybe we want to talk about how we separate some of those tasks, some of those jobs, and find different people who have different skill sets. So today I thought it might be helpful in terms of seeing exactly how that's working out in the marketplace across the country. I've invited a woman who is very skilled in this area, has a company called Rare Agent in Atlanta, Georgia, and she does work for a number of companies around the country. They're companies that you would recognize in a moment if she shared them with you. These are companies that you're going to find out who have outsourced a good portion of their lead generation and calling. So I want to welcome to the show Marge Beeler. Welcome, Marge.
Thank you, Will. Nice to be here.
Well, so tell us a little bit about what Rare Agent does.
Sure. Well, we help sellers and marketers create visibility and engage customers with the goal of increasing sales and improving service. It's an outsourced service. And we usually are helping business-to-business organizations in startups or entrepreneur plus growth companies, mid-size, to accelerate their business growth, and we work as a virtual marketing and sales team, allowing clients to take advantage of the executive-level expertise and best practices, KPIs, that we have developed over the years because we focus on the front end of the funnel, online marketing and outbound sales. We blend it to kind of have that conversation platform because you really have to nurture your leads now it's not just email blast or a outbound call. You really have to blend them and have different ways or contact venues to get in contact with these folks.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your background. What equipped you to do this?
Well, I started out as an executive assistant working for a CEO of a software company. So I understood all the avenues into an organization and even the avenues out, how these executives would communicate and how people would get through. I was the gatekeeper, as they say. And then from there, I got into sales. And then from there, I started my own company. And what happened is when I got into sales, I went out selling. And then some of the executives I had worked for in the past CEOs would call and say, you know, we're not getting anywhere. If I give you a name and a number, can you do the outbound call? Because you can get anybody to return your call or to talk to you. So that's how it started. I kind of stumbled into it.
All right. So what's it been like? What's it been like to run a company that finds, nurtures, generates leads for other companies?
It's interesting and it's fun and you learn along the way. And when I first started, I did not have the infrastructure to really understand how we were doing things and having the analytics and the science behind it. So, for example, I might think that if we weren't getting enough appointments that I would need to just put more hours towards that calling program or more agents. And what we found, once we started putting the infrastructure in place, is sometimes it was the quality of that database the client had given us, or it could have even been their messaging, and that's why we couldn't open doors, versus when we had the right quality of data and the right message, we could open doors. And what we found is the more you brought peer relevance and contact venues into play, you would be able to see the relevance and how you could help kind of kickstart that sales cycle.
And so, let's talk a little bit about what you've found about skill sets mm-hmm. for salespeople. It seems to me that there was a time, maybe 5-10 years ago, when salespeople tended to generate their own leads. I mean, they would get some names from the marketing department, if there was a marketing department, but they were generating their own leads from their networking, from postcards that they'd send out, or they would just call cold on lists that they had picked up.
Mm-hmm.
You see that still happening?
It does, but not to the same degree. What you're finding is there's a whole new world out there and a whole new medium and folks coming up through education. If you think, I kind of know your age, my age, and if you think when we were in school, we probably didn't even play on the computers versus the folks that are coming up and getting their MBAs and all that, they have been in a social environment. So what we find is individuals who understand how influences and contacts and networks, peer influences work, they do very, very well, and they know how to do the research and find the relevance and bring that together. I call it the old school folks. You know, if you look at some of the engineering type organizations out there, and if you've got a lot of the engineers, they've never really gotten into marketing and sales and all, because we deal with a lot of entrepreneurs and startups. A lot of times the companies are started with an engineer that has a great idea, right? So what we find is those folks have a very difficult time coming over to Sales 2.0, as we call it, because they're not used to using all those tools, and they almost get overwhelmed by it.
Yeah, I've certainly known people who've gotten overwhelmed by having to move into a computer. But Sales 2.0, as you're calling it, it does get confusing. I mean, I've heard people say, if I don't use this every day, I forget about it. If I'm only, you know, sending out an email through Constant Contact once a week, I forget about it the next week. I forget how to do it, and it's very, very frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you advise salespeople to do, or sales managers, or VPs of sales who call you? What should we do?
Well, the first thing is you got to find out what is their realistically, what can they do? If they do not have enough resources and they do not have the infrastructure in place, they're not going to be able to do it. And you got to take baby steps. So the first part that we listen and want to kind of do an assessment on is, you know, where are you? What's your interaction with the social media, marketing automation, social media, CRM, Salesforce, et cetera. And then from there, start figuring out what can they do themselves, and maybe they just have never been trained, or what can they outsource? And that's kind of where we, you know, the baby steps.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what have you found that you know, many companies? I'm thinking about SMB companies. Mm-hmm. You know, the $15 to $150 million companies. What have you been able to help them with?
Really helping them understand. You got to look at your strategy. So you're usually looking at your marketing, sales, and operations, and service, right? And how does that all come together? And then you want to see how have they been marketing and how have they been gathering sales and sales leads and how have they converted them. And there's usually three things that come out when we do that assessment. A lot of times they have siloed between sales and marketing, or there's one person doing sales and marketing and they're just overloaded. There's no way they can accomplish everything that's on their plates. That's number one. Number two, if they do have, let's say they have a sales and marketing team and operations, then it's getting the sales and marketing side aligned, making sure they have the same definition of a sales qualified lead versus a marketing qualified lead and what the roles of each department are and even individuals. And then once they start filling that funnel out, mapping that and tracking that from the marketing side through the sales side to close, and you will find a lot of information that comes about from that, because what you'll, for example, the executives do not always hear the true story because, you know, people are trying to protect them or their staff doesn't want to look dumb in front of them. So sometimes you'll find that it's a, you know, it's a jam of resources. Could be maybe there's not enough sales engineers, and then they're going to start, let's hope you get enough opportunities out there, right? If you have to go on site and you've got one sales engineer, you're going to start prioritizing which opportunities to take that individual out on. And sometimes you'll find that you just really need to hire new folks and get them trained so that they can help with the workload.
All right. So you're discovering what I discovered several times. It's happened to me that I was invited in to help improve the sales, and we did it dramatically. I mean, in some cases, doubling or tripling sales over a 3 or 4 month period of time. And to my dismay, surprise and dismay, we blew out the back end. They weren't able to fulfill on the promises, which mm-hmm. had a terrible effect on the sales process, on customers, upon the morale of the sales team. Mm-hmm. And I don't do that anymore. I mean, mm-hmm. we got to know how we're going to handle the increase in sales before we walk in that door, because mm-hmm. that's not helpful to anybody.
No, and we've actually had that with Rarage, and where the first thing I ask is, how are you going to handle success? And they look at me like I'm, you know, what? Nuts, you know? And I'm like, no, I mean, if we can set appointments and get your foot in the door, and now you're going to start an active sales cycle, if you get 5 active sales cycles, and let's say your product is anywhere from 50 to 250,000. I'm just using a low end there. How are you going to handle that? Because if you actually close it, then you got to service it. And a lot of folks never think that far ahead, especially in the SMB market and, you know, segment, because they're not used to it. They don't know what they don't know, is what I always say.
That's right. That's right. And what I'm seeing today is that it's just kind of an opening for companies that have been at 30 million or 20 million or 15 million. There's an opening for them if they want to take it. Mm-hmm. They can increase by 10, 20, 30, 40, 50% in the next 12 to 18 months because of the way the market is. And if they do that, they have to really be prepared to handle success. And I like the mm-hmm. way that you said that. And one person I spoke to recently and said, look, it's coming. you're going to have success here. We're going to have more not only more opportunities, more sales. How will you handle it? And his comment was, bring it on, bring it on. But that's not really good enough, is it?
No. You know, I think the companies that have done, who are really taking it to the next level and they're going 20, 30, you know, 40 opportunities or whatever, are the ones that have totally understood how to embrace, you know, the four spheres of influence: contact, peer, prospect knowledge, and industry thought leadership knowledge. And when they do that well and they put the infrastructure in place and they give the tools to the sales side, sales and marketing, they give the tools and they make sure they use them regularly, they are the ones that are going to leapfrog in front of everybody else. And you can see, you'll see some of these companies that are, you know, 30 million to 100 million. If they've done it right, they're going to be able to expand quickly. They're going to be able to ratchet back when they need to, but they're going to do a very, very great job. It's going to be very efficient and cost efficient, and that's the key. And, you know, you need to be able to get your sales and marketing staff up and running quickly. And if you need to make a change within your infrastructure, you need to be able to do it quickly. And with the tools that are out there these days, these, you know, SaaS web-based products, that is one way, you know, to get a lot of this accomplished.
Now, what were those four things you said? Contact, peer?
It was the four spheres of influence. And it's contact venues. So how does that individual or you like to contact them? It could be events, could be in person, could be on the phone, web, email, video. Any way you're going to, you know, want to interact with that individual or contact them. The second one is peer influence. Who knows this person? Who do you know that knows this person? Or who do they know on thought leaders? And use that peer influence. Kind of think of the people map. I think it's people maps that's out there.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I just discovered that a couple of weeks ago. That is just magnificent.
Oh, you mentioned it to me, and I've been investigating on it, and I'm blown away by that product. Never heard of it until today,
yeah.
You know. But, you know, we use a lot of those type of services, but once you start doing that, if you can bring in your different groups, networks, associations, and see where you are mapped and influenced, and you know how you can get your foot in the door and map that backwards, it will really help. And I'll give you an example just for me. I just brought a new client on in less than 2 weeks. And what happened is Raritan does a lot in the high-tech industry, but we also do a lot in the entertainment industry, film and music. We really have a lot of fun on the films. And one of the main investors of a new film that will be coming out knew that we did a great job, meaning Raritan, because we were able to get to the chairman of the board of FedEx and actually get him to send a fax to another group that we were trying to get a meeting for this film's executive staff. Because of that, they remembered us, and they called us and introduced us to this new client that just came on board. And it's all because the main investor actually does a lot of venture and angel investing too, knew of us, knew his friend who had a company, needed help, and said, you know who you need to speak to? You need to speak to Raritan. And just like that, we were, you know, in the door, and we have a check. And that's 2 weeks. So those are the type of, you know, ways you want to start thinking about how you do your business. And to do that, you got to bring relevance to the conversation to the equation, and you also need to know who knows whom.
Yeah, now what I also hear is an important piece, at least I hear you saying it, and it just it reifies what my experience is, that also who in my network that I have made successful, who have I helped, and who do they know, and how can they pass on the word? That has been such a powerful thing.
Yes, I always say get your customers to sell for you. If you get your customers to sell for you, the person who's hearing it from that customer is going to believe your customer over you any day, because, you know, it's the old, I don't want to say car salesman, but, you know, you're always, most clients and most companies are touting themselves. They're doing seller speak. They're not doing buyer speak. And you really need to let the trust come in through a customer story and just the relationship come in that way, because if a client is happy with you and they're using your services, and then let's say somebody within that company you're going after, you have an employee in there of that company that's worked with you or taken your service in the past from another company, let them do the selling in there.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right, so back to our list. We have contact venue. What mm-hmm. events person, you know, how do people want to be talked to? On the web, do they want to be see videos? Do they want email? Do they want webinars, face-to-face?
They want it all.
That's a contact venue.
Yeah.
And then we have peer influence. Mm-hmm. Who do they know? Who knows mm-hmm. them? Who mm-hmm. are the thought leaders that they trust? And mm-hmm. who have I helped who might be in their network?
Correct.
So what are the next two?
Okay, the next two are thought leadership or industry knowledge. So, for example, today I spoke with, I don't know if you've ever heard of the company Brain Shark. They do...
Yes, I use them.
Okay, I love their product. But, okay, same thing. When I spoke to the VP of Operations out there today, he knew I understood his market just because of the way we spoke, right? I've been mm-hmm. on radio, I have white papers, I've been published, and et cetera, and same with a lot of their marketing folks. So we automatically had a connection, and I actually introduced them to Shade Tree Insight 2.
Yeah,
so Shade Tree right there is going to get a quick mm-hmm. introduction, right?
Right.
So that is thought leadership, industry knowledge. How can you show that you are knowledgeable about mm-hmm. or fit into their need, right?
Right.
So that's
right.
the thought leadership, Aberdeen Group, if you're doing things with Aberdeen or Forrester.
Well, I'm glad to hear you mention Aberdeen Group, because mm-hmm. there's going to be something coming out from Aberdeen Group that's going to be very significant to what Sandler Training has been up to. So I'm glad to hear you talk about Aberdeen.
Well, good. Yes, Aberdeen is known for their research. And, one of our rare agents' best programs was just recently on a company that had Aberdeen do a webinar for them. And those leads were hot. And they were the VP of Operations, Logistics, and I can't think of the other title. But, again, you want those warm, and how are you going to interact, and how are you going to show that you understand that space? So that mm-hmm. was the third one. And the fourth one is prospect knowledge or customer knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. if you know an organization is struggling in certain areas because you have individuals inside, you have champions, or you've been with that client and understand all the little nuances and what they are struggling with, that shows it. So, when we go on site with some of our longer-term clients, and they're very big, and they know if we're coming into a different business unit, we know some of the same problems the other groups have had because they're still siloed. And so mm-hmm. we can bring that, hey, this group had this same problem. Here's some of the sales conversion problems they had. Here's how we solved it. You're welcome to go call so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
And that, okay. again, shows, wow, she understands, he understands. Or you're bringing it to it, to the prospect, even knowledge that you understand their marketplace and you understand them. One of the best individuals that sold to me, to my company, Rare Agent, is they understood my market. They understood how I could use their tool to drive sales. And they did a very, very good job, and they were very empathetic. I actually lost my mom 2 years ago. And during that time, we were supposed to have some big meetings, and I couldn't go to them. And I was a decision maker, and I signed the checks, right? So they couldn't get their sale through. But that did not come through, or their disappointment did not come through. What came through from them was, one, they still understood that I had the need. They were going to put a couple weeks on hold because they understood I lost my mom. But they sent a sympathy card, and it was sincere. It wasn't just fake to try to get a sale. And they've actually ended up being one of my best strategic partners.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we got the pieces that are very important these days in terms of being able to talk to, nurture, keep a relationship going are, do I know the right contact venue, and am I using it?
Mm-hmm.
And how would I find that out?
Well, there's different venues and there's different ways to research. So I'll give you an example. We're doing a research project, and it's actually for an inbound call center that's near shore. So, you know, they said, how do we find this out and how are we going to know? You know, how do we find out? So the first thing is you go to the company website and you research. You can find key executives, press releases. You'll even see social media sites, Facebook, LinkedIn, how they're going to interact. And if they have one of those, I think it's HubSpot or whatever, that will have all the different social media flavors, you know, you'll learn a lot right there. And then you look at the employee and also the job seekers and the venues, the career boards. Then you're going to look at the industry. So, for example, there's a lot of call center industry associations, places to go to research. You're going to find a lot there. You go through government. For call centers, the government or the local chamber of commerces, the states, they will put a lot of statistics out there about Department of Labor, economics, so you're going to be able to do that. And a lot of people forget to do this, the complaint venues. There are scorecards out there for customer service. So, for example, if I was going to go after, want to outsource a call center to someone, and let's say it's Electrolux, I could look at the complaint venues and find out what are the complaints. And if it's because the agents that they're using or the associates can't speak English and I'm near shore contact center, that's going to give me a lot of information, so now I can go back and have a relevant conversation to one of the executives. And if I've done enough of my research, I might find that even on that complaint venues and the scorecards, that maybe this company has great service, and maybe they've even won some recent awards. So now I'm going to use that to bring in relevance to the conversation. And then, of course, the social media. It's amazing what you can find through Twitter and Facebook. And just follow, if you go out for this one company that we've been researching for on call centers, they do not have a lot on social media. They're, you know, kind of old school in some ways. But when we did the research, we found that there are a lot of call centers out there now starting to put that information out, you know, Facebook, LinkedIn. But there's really no groups on Twitter, et cetera, that are keeping up with stuff. There's a little bit of mention, but nothing like some of these other areas, you know, if you looked up music, high tech, et cetera, there's lots of groups on there. So those are some of the different ways of using those four spheres of fluence and how to bring that into research and what venues to go to for your research.
Well, let me ask you, what mm-hmm. what is a complaint venue and how would we find one?
Well, there are customer service scorecards out there that you can access. So, if you look at any of the, you can put complaint venues even out there or complaint scorecards and, you know, in your search string on Google or Bing or whatever, and you'll be amazed at what comes out. Or if you go to, look at the India call centers or whatever, you're going to find, I stumbled across it, these complaint venues, and that's how I found it.
Well, I was just thinking, if there were a company that was hoping to help companies with customer service, that's precisely where they should go, is to find the companies who are, who are winding up with lots of complaints from customers because they have poor customer service.
Right.
And not only would they know that this is somebody who needs help, but they would also be able to bring that information back and help the decision maker recognize that they really do need help.
Right. So, for example, is customer service scorecard just a scoreboard, just FYI? And then you can search for a company name. So, for example, with Electrolux, I just brought it up while we were talking. They are ranked pretty high, and their overall score... they had 16 negative complaints, but overall they have a 94.12% comments and positive, which may not seem like a lot, but when you start, keeping track of all that, you don't want negative comments. I have two examples of people who are keeping track of this data, and then they're using it to help with their customer service. Rubbermaid, when it snowed here in Atlanta, I put a tweet out saying, thank you, Rubbermaid. Your plastic garbage can lids are great sleds. And I actually got a free coupon. Their marketing department, I guess, watches that. The other thing was, it was one of the car rentals. I'm trying to think. The one that comes Enterprise. And it snowed here, and 3 days I could not get out. I mean, I couldn't even get out of my subdivision. And they were going to charge me for something, and I was having a fit because I had an accident and was in their rental. And there, I put it out on a tweet, and I got, hey, this is the customer service of Enterprise, and we'll make sure this gets taken care of. Please call us, you know? And they gave us a number so because they can respond directly to your tweets. So those are ways that you're looking at that complaint venue and you're turning it around to your advantage.
Well, I'm looking here on customerservicescoreboard.com, and interestingly enough, one of the bottom 15 companies is Harry and David.
Uh-huh.
And have you been following Harry and David? I mean, I don't know if they went bankrupt or something, but I guess they did go bankrupt. And isn't that interesting that they got they're in the bottom 15 for customer service and they go bankrupt?
Yeah, I had heard they had were going bankrupt, and Whole Foods, and there's another one that's I think has bought some of their franchises or
uh-huh.
So
well, but that's an interesting piece of information.
Mm-hmm.
That's really very nice. Yeah, so all of the stores, I understand all the stores in Orange County have been closed. All the Harry and David stores in Orange County have been closed. Well,
yeah.
This is really marvelous. So
well,
if somebody's looking for how to help people with customer service, this would be a place to go look.
Yep, and you'll see it has the leaderboard and all, and it's a pretty interesting thing. So, you know, I hope I didn't just hurt my new client.
Why
but,
is that?
But this is the expertise we bring to the table because we do all the front end research, you know,
right.
Pre-call research,
right.
And outbound uh-huh. calling, and a lot of people have never even do not know how to do this research.
Well, and why would they? I mean, if they're building widgets,
mm-hmm.
why would they? Where would they come to find out all of this information, and where would they build the expertise? Where would they, how would they get into the conversations like I know that you have with Jim Banks and, mm-hmm. Other lead generation and marketing automation people? They would have to hire two or three or four people. And
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't make sense today. You don't have to have somebody within the walls of your building in order to use their expertise.
Right. Well, and you mentioned, Jim Banks and his organization. I actually outsourced my IT and Salesforce administration to his company because
uh-huh.
besides some of the other, what they do with, Salesforce Insight 2, they have a very great expert on staff, and, you know, I get him to help me because I don't have to hire a full-time certified Salesforce administrator. I take
the
advantage
Paul,
of his expertise.
Is that Paul who does that for you?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Well, he is great.
He is wonderful. Paul
yeah.
is wonderful.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. So what we're seeing is that the four things, get the contact venue right. Find
mm-hmm.
out what their peer influence, who do they know, who knows them, and might help me to sell to them. What is the thought leadership or leadership knowledge that they have, and what's going on in their company? What are they struggling with? And this complaint scorecard, that's a very important place. That's very wonderful. That
mm-hmm.
This has been great knowledge. I really appreciate you sharing this with us, and I know that it'll come back to you. There's no question about that. There'll be people picking up the phone and calling you. And if they wanted to, Marge,
mm-hmm.
how would they do that?
Well, there's you look at your contact venues. There's web, rareagent.com, www.rareagent.com. There's phone, 678-771-8010. And then they can tweet. We're at Rare Agent, and we're on Facebook, too.
Excellent. Well, you probably wouldn't want anybody to call you directly, would you?
They're welcome. That 678-771-8010 actually comes to me, but that's not my cell. That's totally different.
All right, so who would you want them to call? What's the number again?
678-771-8010, and that is our direct line for Rare Agent, the company.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking your time. I mean, it's kind of late over there in Atlanta right now.
I thank goodness I've got older kids now, so I don't have that trying to put babies to bed.
All right. Well, that's wonderful. Really appreciate you being with us. That's great.
Sure,
enjoyed a lot and learned a lot. Thank you
great.
So much, Marge.
Thank you. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And now, let's hear a word from our sponsor, the folks at Sandler Training.
Andrew Smith, a salesperson, is getting ready to walk into the biggest meeting of his life. His sales are way down this year, and so is his confidence. His heart thumps. He can't catch his breath. He should have called Sandler Training first. Sales is a tough business, but Sandler Training uses continual reinforcement with ongoing training and individual coaching. You won't fail because we won't let you. Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement.
And now back to Will Christ and his next guest.
Well, we're gonna take a little time today and think about social media, because this has become such a big part of the presence of businesses, consultants, big businesses, medium-sized businesses, small businesses. The place that you occupy in social media, whether it's up on Gist, what happens in Facebook, LinkedIn, what kinds of pictures, your video, all of these things can be overwhelming. And so we want to pick up from time to time on people who are using social media or people who are providing social media and begin to talk about that. We're going to have Adam Metz on in a couple of weeks from the Pedowitz Group, who does a lot of advising to people around the country for social media. And Adam grew up with computers and lives and breathes and tweets almost naturally, so it'd be fun to talk with him. But today we're gonna take a look at a piece of social media that is beginning to roll out in various places around the country, and we're gonna listen to what the owner, the founder of OC Talk Radio, how he sees what's going on in social media. And so we're going to ask Paul Roberts to spend a little time with us today from OC Talk Radio. So, Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you for letting me share this hour with you.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how did you get into
social media? How did I stumble into this? I had been a PR person for a million years, on and off. One of the things that we've seen over the last couple of years is, by default, PR agencies and PR people are ending up having to handle social media. Why? Because the ad agencies don't want to touch it. They don't have anybody inside who understands it. They don't know how to bill doing things for it. The marketing people inside companies don't want to handle it. So one of two things happens, or one of three things. Either nobody does it, and so it falls apart, or somebody, usually the secretary or some young hotshot at the company, will take it on as an extra duty, or the PR agencies, if they have one, are being assigned that. So I had been asked over and over again, what is social media and why should I be doing it? And that's what started this conversation.
So you
want me to answer those questions here?
A good question to answer right now.
Social media is poorly defined and poorly understood today. Here's my definition. The purpose of social media is to do one thing and one thing only, and that's to start a conversation. You don't use social media to sell a product. It's not an ad. You don't use social media to hype people about it. That's PR or promotions. Social media is simply a way for the company to talk directly to their end users and start a conversation with them. Now, having said that, what are the channels to do that? They're almost unlimited. Social media can be anything that engages directly with the end consumer, where there's no filter in between. So it's a blog where you write something, they read it and respond. It's a Facebook page where you post pictures or interesting information about your company and people like it or react to it or respond to it. It's a tweet where people are talking about something immediate happening right now. Listen to this, show up here, go somewhere, do something. And the newest form, I think, is what we're doing right now. Social media is internet radio at its best. And why does that work so well? Because if the purpose is to start a conversation, what's easier than just getting two people together, streaming that out live over the internet for everyone to enjoy, recording it, and archiving it, and making it available as a learning tool, as a resource? So you and I are having a conversation right now. We're doing social media. And in the same time, we're going to record this and share this through your network, through my network. We now have a viral marketing tool as well that's going to carry this message on through other people that we haven't even met yet. So I think this is the most powerful social medium yet. It's the easiest to do, and it's the least understood, the newest form of social media out there.
Well, now, let's talk a little bit about what is internet radio? How is that different from broadcast radio?
Well, let's compare it to two things, not just broadcast radio, but podcasts. Broadcast radio is what we all grew up with, AM or FM. There's just two bands, two channels. And those, you sit in a studio, two people talk, and that's not streamed, but it's sent out over the airwaves at a frequency. You know, AM is one frequency, FM is another frequency. The problem is that those public airwaves, those frequencies that are floating through the air, are getting crowded. That's why they took back the analog TV frequency, because we use the same thing for cell phones and for garage door openers and military communication, all these other things that send signals through the air. So those airwaves, there's only so many of them. You have to have certain separation between each signal, and there's not many of those public airwaves left. So by and large, we're seeing a reduction in stuff sent over the airwaves, and instead they're finding other ways to get it. With television, it started with cable TV. Now it's satellite. With radio, we saw it with satellite, XM Sirius, where you could get a satellite subscription. It's not coming to you through a modulated wavelength. It's being sent to you through a satellite signal. And the same thing is true now with internet radio. We're doing the exact same thing that they do in terrestrial radio. Traditional radio is now called terrestrial radio. We're doing the same thing they're doing, but instead of taking that signal and sending it out through the airwaves, we're sending it out through the internet. We're streaming it right now. We're sending it little bits and packets so that you can instantly pick it up and play it. It doesn't reside in your computer. You don't have to download it first. You hit a button and it plays, just like radio. And compare that to podcasts, which is where you and I record something in a studio, put it on a server, and then tell people to go find it, go fetch it, download it, and then they can play it. We're actually doing both of those things here. We're streaming it live, and we are also simultaneously recording it so people can fetch it. They can go download it through iTunes and all the other services that are out there. But we're doing something different, something in between. We're taking traditional radio, putting it on the internet, streaming it live. That makes sense?
Sure. Now, it seems
you say that so easily, like, oh, it's no big deal. It's internet radio. Yeah, it's a total disruption of the traditional medium.
Here's what I want to ask you about. It seems to me that internet radio can come from a do-it-yourself mentality.
Yes.
It can come from, I'm going to make fun here. It can come from, two guys in shorts sitting in their basement.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Now, starting from that and then moving into a professional quality, what does that take?
It takes a couple things. It takes better equipment, and it takes a live engineer. Let's look at some of the alternatives that are out there. You know, you can create a podcast and put it up in lots of ways and shapes and forward. All you really need is a microphone or a headset and a microphone and plug it into your computer, and you can get a program like Audacity, which is free, and you can record it. Pretty hard to get callers, though, and pretty hard to get guests calling in and run commercials and do all that stuff because you're hosting the show. You know, you can't host it and do all these other things, and to get telephone lines into the internet is very difficult. So that's a huge leap from just recording your own podcast in the basement, putting it up, to the next step, which is having somebody you contact. You're either live in the studio or you're contacting them via Skype, which is a digital signal. They're mixing that together with commercials, intros, outros, and other things. And then they have another piece of equipment, not to get too technical, but it's called a Mix Minus. It allows telephone lines to come into the mixing board, which is hooked up to the internet, allows a telephone line to come in, an analog telephone line, turns it into a digital signal, mixes it together with everything else, the host voice, commercials, and everything else, and then sends it back over the telephone line minus the original voice on the telephone. Otherwise, it'd be a feedback. That's the most sophisticated piece of equipment that you need to mimic a traditional radio station. That's what allows you to have call-in guests and to have callers like you did just recently here. So that's a much more elaborate thing. That's probably, you've gone from a couple hundred dollars to, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 to have a setup like that to professionally broadcast this over the internet. And then you need somebody, you got to pay somebody to be the engineer and to work with you, to be the producer and the engineer, to be Roz while you're being Fraser, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Okay, all right. So now, what is it that, how does this participate in social media in terms of getting conversations going with other people?
It's probably the easiest way to start a conversation, I think, because it doesn't take a lot of, it doesn't take some special skill. If you're going to write a blog, you got to be a good writer, or it's going to get boring. If you're going to do tweets and other things, you've got to have the discipline to do it constantly. And the challenge I always say is, what do you talk about on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and all these things? What do you talk about all the time? You run out of content. So I always say that internet radio gives you two things. It's an easy way to create content. You just talk to people. You get them in a studio or you get them on two phone lines, and your engineer mixes that together, streams it, records it, and stores it. It's an easy way to create content. And then if you're smart, you've now got something to fill up the rest of your social media channels. You're not just saying, hey, I got up this morning, or I'm going to work, or it's a sunny day. Stupid stuff that people fill their Twitter and Facebook accounts with. Fill it with information. Hey, I got Paul Roberts on my show this afternoon. Or, sorry you missed it. Here's the link where you can go download it. He had something really interesting to say. So it not only creates content, it creates content for all your other social mediums if you're smart about it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the internet radio itself is different in social media context from the way the broadcast radio was.
Very much so. The limitation of broadcast radio was always it goes out over the air and it disappears. So if you miss the show, you're out of luck. You're only reaching the people who happen to have stumbled upon it that minute. Here we've got something where we can tell people, just like a regular radio, get used to this every week at 3 o'clock, put it on your calendar, we're going to regularly send this out to the world, and at the same time, we're doing what they can't do in traditional broadcast. We're recording it, storing it, and making it available as a downloadable file, a podcast, if you will. So we get that extra benefit, and that's powerful because we're seeing statistics that show 5, 6, 7 times whatever your live listeners are, you're going to get that many people listening to it later. And why? Because your guest is going to go back out to the world through his social media channels and say, wow, I was on the Will Chris show, I was on the Pilgrim and the 405. It was fun. It was interesting. Listen. And he's going to drive an audience to you. And I think that's really the difference between podcasts and radio. Podcasts are you talking about something, like I'm doing now, and radio is conversing with people.
So what we're really doing is looking at what happens on internet radio is just a tool for helping the conversation move forward.
Exactly. I say it starts the conversation. Now we'll get a little deeper. People always say, okay, then how does all this fit together? And this is strictly my opinion. I've never read this anywhere else, but I think each of the social media channels has its own purpose and its own audience. And too often people just do the same thing on all channels. I think radio is where you start the conversation. You call up someone that you want to meet, and you interview them. And you've now met them and started a conversation with them. Maybe you meet them beforehand as a pre-interview. Maybe you meet them afterwards and give them the link. But whatever it is, it's how you start that conversation. They get to know you. They become aware of you. They see you as an expert in the field because you take the time to host a show. Gee, you must know something about this. And it shows not only what you know, but who you know. After that period, that initial introduction, what do you do? How do you continue the conversation? And that's where I think all these other things come into play. I think Facebook is primarily pictures and sort of getting to know people. I view it like it's where you put the pictures of the company picnic or the pictures of your last promotion or other sorts of things. It's more of a visual personal medium, even for business fan pages. I think that Twitter is just a way to alert people that something has been posted on these other channels or that you're going somewhere and can be seen. That's what they used it in the last political election. Obama pioneered the use of Twitter. Hey, he's coming here. He's going there. So they used it as a way to connect people and drive people together. So I'd say radio starts the conversation. Your blog is more in-depth and probably continues the conversation. You share more information with them after the fact or a newsletter. And then Twitter is simply a way to tell people, I got a blog, I got a radio show, I got something coming up, take a look at it. Facebook is where you put the pictures, and LinkedIn is kind of your resume and professional groups where you link up with people. And then there's other things, you know, Meetup and all these other things, too, with the other groups that you talked with so well here. It's a pretty wide open, it's the Wild West, you know, you're the pilgrim on the 405. You've definitely stumbled into a wide open area here when you start talking about social media.
Well, and so what I'm hearing is that when you have a discipline of having a radio show every week, you're generating content by default. I mean, you're going to generate content.
And that's the number one failure for business social media programs. You have, I don't care if you have a $5 million or a $50 million or a $5 billion company. Somebody has to come up with something interesting to say every week, and they've got to stick with it. If you stop the conversation or the conversation gets boring, people will drop out. And then you're going to say, what a waste of time. Well, nobody's listening. Why are we doing this? You can't just tweet once a month. You can't put a blog up once a year. And you can't have a radio show, you know, once every 6 months. That's the failure that people follow through. So picture it that you're going to meet a bunch of people and you're going to start a conversation with them. And by definition, that means you're going to talk to them and they're going to talk back and you're going to commit to that. You're going to engage with them over a prolonged period of time.
And you're also going to preserve that and turn that into content.
Yes. And I'll tell you my most interesting statistic. There's a company called Edelman. They're the number one PR agency in the world. The current chairman is Mark Penn, who ran Hillary Clinton's campaign. That gives you some idea of the kind of, you know, power that these people wield. They handle, I don't know, Ford Motor, major companies like that. And I was flabbergasted to read, again, I've been a PR person, a press agent for 20 years. I was flabbergasted to read last year that they hired a producer from the BBC to produce programs for their companies. I thought to myself, this is crazy. This isn't what PR is all about. You pay a PR person because they have the contacts and the knowledge to reach people, to reach those ivory towers, those people who are unreachable, the writers and the reporters and the editors for the newspapers and the TV stations and the radio stations. You as an average person can't reach out to them. You have to go through an intermediary, and that's the PR person, and that's their whole sole reason for being. Now we're admitting that the traditional media shrunk so much that your PR firm is like, I don't know any of these people anymore because they're all gone. They got fired. They got shrunk. They got downsized. Look at the average size of the newspaper now. It's a fraction of what it used to be. So in that world, I think to survive, PR agencies are starting to say, wait a minute, we can create our own media. And with the new social media challenge mediums that are out there, channels that are out there, you are your own media company. I'll say that again. You, big or small, are your own media company. You don't have to rely on begging somebody else to tell people your story. You can go out yourself and have your own YouTube channel. You can have your own internet radio show. You can have your own online news magazine. You can create content and should create content to talk directly to your customers and your community.
And when you say you are your own media company, that reminds me of that New Yorker cartoon maybe 8-10 years ago. Two dogs, one with his paws on the keyboard in front of a computer, and the line underneath is, when you're on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog.
That's true. That's true. You have the opportunity to be as big or small as you want to be. Nobody really understands when they're listening to a talk radio show like this. Are there 2 people listening or 2 million? Could be anything. When they read your newsletter or your blog or whatever, you better prepare it as if, you know, you are the New York Times. And therefore, companies are having to realize that they have, it's kind of scary, they have an opportunity to do what they've never done, to talk directly to the consumers. But at the same time, who's going to help craft that message for them? Who's going to help that technology? Who's going to do it? Who's going to come up with the message and deliver it? I think that's the open question these days. And for many of us, the challenge is do it yourself. Figure out, find a channel, and start doing it yourself. That's what social media is.
Yeah, and so OC Talk Radio provides, Internet Talk Radio provides a channel for somebody to focus on how am I going to generate content on a regular basis, how am I going to have content that's interesting, and how am I having content that involves other people, so we get feedback right away. It's not just blasting something out.
Exactly, exactly. And so what we do is we're your production house. We have the technology so that you don't have to go out and buy this equipment yourself and master it. Too many other things to learn how to do. We have the software and the equipment to stream it, store it, to send it out through social media channels. And, you know, for a fee, a small fee, we'll help you produce these shows. And it's our goal to create the best shows possible, not just because you're paying us, but because we're putting them on our own station here, octalkradio.net, and eventually we'll run ads in between. That's how we'll offset the cost. We can't make a living just a couple $100 a month running, you know, producing radio shows for people, I don't think. Eventually, you know, some of our income comes from the production fee, and some of it will come from the actual ads that we run between shows when we collect enough of them and start promoting that.
All right, so tell me a little bit about what's been your experience with the shows that you've been producing so far.
I'm flabbergasted. I'm floored. To use a word that my daughter uses to death, it's awesome. I can't believe what we're seeing happen out of this. For example, we're seeing that it's probably the most powerful prospecting tool imaginable. Hey, Joe, I'm an attorney, and I specialize in business law, or I'm a financial planner, and I want to meet business owners and executives. So I get a list, and I endlessly dial for dollars, cold call these people at work. Hey, can I speak to Mr. Smith, the owner of Smith Motors? I want to talk to him. I want to set up a meeting and want to take him to lunch. Click. Hey, I want to have him come to my free seminar. Forget it. Maybe he'll subscribe to my newsletter. No, I got too much junk email coming already. Call him up instead and say, hey, Mr. Smith, I'd like to interview you in my radio show. You got a radio show? Yeah, every week, 3 o'clock. Where does it go? It goes out to the world. And we interview thought leaders like yourself, trying to understand what's working, what's not for our audience. Why wouldn't he take you up on that offer? Even if there's 2 people and a dog listening, to use your analogy before, that's 2 people more than he reached today here. And it isn't just the one time, it lives on. You're going to give him a file that he can use to promote his business as well. Hey, I was on the Paul Roberts Show. And nobody's ever going to ask, well, what's the Paul Roberts Show? He's going to take that tape and run with it because, one, nobody else gives him a chance to talk about himself and his company. And two, he wants to promote what he's doing as well. So it's a win-win for everybody. And the people out there get a quick idea of what is Mr. Smith and what's he like. More than just reading their ad and looking at their static web page, you get a chance to hear him and hear how he thinks. Is this somebody you like? Is this somebody you want to do business with? So it's a win-win for everybody.
All right. So have you actually seen that business is being done with the people who are doing talk radio, internet talk radio?
Well, I'll throw it back to you. I know it's worked. I know you've met people and through that started associations. We have some people on here who are using this strictly as a prospecting tool, a way to meet people, and they're making an immediate return. They've got immediate dollars that they can attest to this. If not for their internet radio show, they would not have met these people and gotten the jobs and the works that they did. We've got that documented now. The second thing we're seeing is beyond creating an immediate return on your investment, which very little social media does. Here's one that does. You talk to somebody, you meet somebody you always want to get to meet, you start a conversation in a very high-level fashion, and that can lead to an immediate relationship, immediate project. Beyond that, we're seeing it's a great way to brand yourself. Everybody wants to get into branding. Why me and not the other 400 attorneys out there? Well, I'm the one with the radio show. Therefore, by definition, I must know something about what I'm talking about. And it instantly sets you apart. It's a differentiator. And then beyond that, what we're seeing is it has some ancillary benefits that we didn't even envision. For example, I'll give you a very tangible one that I use all the time. A friend of mine is an attorney, David Griffith. He's an international attorney. And very common name. When you type in David Griffith 6 months ago, were you to do that, he would have showed up on page 20 on Google. Not very impressive. Even though he has an impressive list of clients, he just has kind of a static website he threw up once upon a time and hasn't touched it since. Now, since he's done this, every week he's adding new content to his website. People are linking to their episodes on his website. And he's driving traffic to his website. If you type in David Griffith under Google, not David Griffith Attorney or David Griffith Long Beach, just the word David Griffith, out of the millions of David Griffiths out there, he appears on page one. Why? Because Google, the only thing they'll tell you is if you want to organically increase your search engine rankings, if you want to move up and not pay for it, there's only three things you can do. Increase traffic, increase links, and add audio or video of any type to your website. Those three things automatically buy you brownie points with the Google search engine. They automatically assume you're more interesting. So because
Let me interrupt you here.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. You know Charlie Crist, was governor of Florida, right?
Yes, right.
All right. So if you typed in the word Crist a couple of months ago, you'd get Charlie Crist.
I'll bet.
I just typed in Will Crist. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 7 before we first. I got 7 times coming up on the top.
Look at that.
Before we get to Charlie Crist.
Look at that.
And then it picks up again with the Sandler blog and moves on down. I just took out Charlie Crist.
So what's that worth to be on page one? I mean, that's worth something. That's worth a lot. Because when the only thing we do to check each other out today, when I meet you at a networking event or you send me something and somebody recommends I talk to you, there's only one thing I do. I go to Google and I Google your name. And if you pop up on the first page or two, I'm impressed. If I don't see you there, I'm not very impressed. And more so, if I see you only have one thing listed or archived, your website or your blog, okay, that's kind of normal. But if I see pages of stuff pop up, press releases about guests you have, blogs that you're running, Twitter feeds, Meetup, LinkedIn, all this stuff, I start to think this guy's a mover and a shaker. He's doing something here. So whether that's fake or phony or real, that's how we judge each other. As two dogs, that's how we sniff each other out. And that's where social media is very, very powerful.
Yeah. Well, that's excellent. Well, Paul, I really appreciate you taking some time and helping people to think through what it is to be involved in social media and what kinds of things can be done to provide the discipline or at least some of the structure that's going to generate the content that's going to be interesting and winsome for people who want to be in social media.
Yep. The good news is it's easy to do. Anybody can get into it, and the cost is low. The problem is you've got to come up with interesting content, and you've got to constantly do it. So it's a commitment, and that commitment is what fails for most companies. They want to just throw it out once and forget about it like an ad. Doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I want to tell you how much I appreciate you being here and tell you how much I appreciate the work that you're doing in producing OC Talk Radio. It's always wonderful to know that I have somebody on the other side of this this mic who is there to support me and to make it all possible. I mean, how many times did I dream, think, wish, hope, tell myself I ought to do something like this?
Yeah, right.
And I think looking back on it, was picking up the phone and talking with you about it that helped me to get convinced that I could do it.
Yeah, and you're not alone, you know. And let's face it, neither of us are young chickens anymore here. You know, you would think it's just the 20-somethings that have figured this out, but the majority of people on our station are probably 50 or 60 years of age. They're trying to find a way not just to stay current, but to get in the forefront, just what you're doing here, you know, pioneering things. And that's what I find so refreshing.
Well, thank you so much for taking some time, and we look forward to hearing from you again sometime.
Okay, thank you.
So there you have it. We've got a lot of things that we can do in business today, and we certainly want to innovate. We certainly want to have good strategic plans. We also want to sell. And we have to talk to people and get new prospects into our funnel so that we can begin to proceed down our sales process. The things that are around us today where that's happening are things like what Marge was talking about, where we have to be very, very clear about how does somebody want to be talked to today? And I venture to say it's probably not through a television ad when what we're hearing, statistics tell us, is that 86% of people who can TiVo passed an advertisement on TV do. So that's probably not how people want to get a conversation going. So finding out what's helpful and what's working in your marketplace is very important. And then also hearing from Paul talk about the tools that are there for us to generate the content that's going to be attractive to people, winsome, and help people to find us in this large conversation that's going on out there called the internet. So a lot of wonderful things we're finding out as we walk up and down the 405, and a lot of great things that are happening in this wonderful world of Southern California. So thanks for listening. We look forward to talking with you again next week. This is the Pilgrim on the 405, wishing you a great day and a great week.
You've been listening to the only person out there wandering the wilderness, plowing the fields, and exploring the frontiers of what's possible with sales techniques and sales technologies today. It's your own personal guide, the Pilgrim on the 405, only on octalkradio.net.